Hello, beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. But before we get into that, I have incredible, exciting, tremendous news. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the author and architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the New Communism, is out now on social media. Yes, he just started his social media accounts at Bob Avakian Official on all the platforms. He's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL Revolution Nothing Less show is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic three-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment. So the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show.
My name is Andy Z. I'm a host of the show.
And my name is Sansara Taylor. Welcome to everybody tuning in. This show is about an actual revolution. That is the overthrow of the system of capitalism, imperialism that rules over and dominates and causes such misery to the people of the world. And we are followers of the revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian, who has forged a whole new framework for human emancipation. And you're going to get to know more about all of this through the course of today's show.
This week's edition of our website, revcom.us, posted an article that begins with this. Kenan Anderson, a 31-year-old black man. Tyree Nichols, a 29-year-old black man. Jordell Richardson, a 14-year-old black youth. Eddie Irizarry, a 27-year-old Puerto Rican man. Niani Finnelson, a 27-year-old black woman. And on and on. And these are just some of the at least 1,243 lives stolen by cops across the United States last year, murdered in cold blood. The research group Mapping Police Violence said this was the highest in the 10 years it has been keeping track. This means that on the average, 3 people were killed by pigs in this country every day last year. Black people were killed at double the rate of their proportion of the population. Native Americans were killed at a rate of 2.2 times higher than white people. And the Washington Post reported that Hispanic Americans are also killed by the police at a disproportionate rate. And here is an important fact. Most of these killings, quote, began with police responding to suspected nonviolent offenses or cases where no crime was reported, end quote. In other words, these pigs weren't threatened. There was no violent confrontation until the cops made it violent. And here's another fact from this article. 98.1% of the murders by cop over the past 10 years have resulted in no charges against the killer cops. And I want to bring in one more thing. In 2021, 1 year after the historic massive protests against police murder of disproportionately black and brown people in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, the number of people shot dead by the police that next year declined by 7 persons. And since then, it has gone up and up and up to this year's horrific historic milestone. But what of the future? Donald Trump has called for cops to shoot young people on sight while shoplifting, and he's floated out in rallies and in reported leaked private discussions of wanting firing squads, hangings, group executions to put the fear of God in what he calls so-called criminals, which is black and brown youth. And the more refined Biden calls for fund the police to continue these outrageous murders that they call justified homicide. And I heard one of these woke hustlers who was widely touted as a leader against police murder in 2020 speak a few weeks ago. And she bragged about one cop being indicted for a murder in the South, saying that all we can do is chip away at police misconduct one case at a time. This after she promoted the bogus and idiotic demand that could never be realized under this system of defund the police, a demand which contributed to diluting and hobbling the righteous mass movement in 2020. In his dialogue with Cornel West at Riverside Church in 2014, Babavakian said this.
Listen to the police and what they tell you. Well, if officer, notice how respectfully he's treated. Officer Wilson. He's a thug, a murderer. Officer Wilson. Well, if Officer Wilson is indicted, that's going to make it very difficult for police officers in these difficult situations where their life is on the line. What? Let's translate that into real terms. What they're saying is, if we can't go out and shoot down these youth in cold blood over and over again, we cannot and will not do our job. Because that is their job. And let me ask you this. If that is not their job, then why do they do it over and over and over and over again? And why are they never punished for doing it over and over and over again? Because this is what this system needs them to do. Because it has a whole section of people in the inner cities that it can't even profitably exploit anymore. So it treats them as so much human garbage. Instead of being able to and moving to provide them with work and a decent life, it pens them in the ghettos, encourages them to kill each other, and then kills them on top of all that.
The brutal history and the horrific reality of this country down to today has white supremacy and capitalism thoroughly woven into its fabric. And to put an end to this wanton murder by police, we need a real revolution.
Now, you just heard a little bit from Babavakian, gave you a sense of the fire within him and his passion for this revolution. We're going to go now to a tremendous new thing in this movement for revolution, which is Babavakian direct and unfiltered on social media. This is his second social media post, digging further at this question of America and its so-called greatness.
Bob Avakian, Revolution, number 2. This is Bob Avakian, BA, back again, going deeper into why we need a revolution. Let's start with this big question. When has the USA been a great country? The answer? Never. Some people may not like my saying this. They feel stung by this truth. So let's look at the reality. This republic to which we are supposed to pledge allegiance was founded on slavery and genocidal robbery, keeping millions of black people in chains for generations, killing off huge numbers of Native Americans and stealing their land, waging a war that ripped off half of Mexico, greatly expanding slavery. So was this a great country all during that time, when millions of people were enslaved, owned by bloodsuckers who constantly whipped the slaves to make them work harder under horrific conditions, slave owners who raped masses of enslaved women? Was this country great then? Was it great when, for generations after slavery was formally ended, black people as a whole were segregated, discriminated against, and continually terrorized, with repeated massacres of black people and thousands of black people lynched? Was it great when all during that time, LGBT people were illegal, when women were legally treated as inferior to men, and men could legally rape their wives? Was it a great country then? Or is it great now, when people are every day denied basic rights, when the police kill 1,000 people every year, especially people of color, and in the 60 years since civil rights acts were passed, segregation and discrimination has remained as bad or worse as it ever was, and thousands of black people have been killed by police, even greater numbers than all those who were lynched during all the years of Ku Klux Klan terror after the Civil War. Has this country ever been great, when right from the beginning and down to today, the whole thing has literally been built on the broken bodies, the blood and bones of millions and now billions of people worldwide, cruelly exploited, used and abused by this system, with all this backed up by murder on a massive scale, carried out by the police and the armed forces of this country? No, this country has never been great. It has always been a horror for masses of people. And if you don't know all this is true, then you don't know what you need to know. And the biggest reason you don't know it is because the powers that be don't want you to know it. And instead, they want you caught up believing the lie that, as they constantly tell you, this is the greatest country in the world, and their system is the greatest system that could ever be. Next, I'll be coming back with more about the whole rotten system that rules in this country and dominates the world, the system of capitalism imperialism, and the revolution we need to sweep this system off the face of the earth.
All right, that was Bob Avakian coming directly to you and everybody who can access him on social media on all the platforms. He's at Bob Avakian Official. This is a tremendous new thing for the revolution to have his voice directly coming to us regularly in this way. And it's an incredible strength overall for the revolution, but especially in this pivotal year with so much on the line. So we have to take full advantage of this. If you're not yet, follow at Bob Avakian Official and get your friends, your family, and people that you're meeting to follow BA on social media and spread this as we get out in the world with this revolution. With that, I want to give everybody watching a sense of what else is in our show today. We're going to go down to the intensifying situation on the border, U.S.-Mexico border. We're going to hear from Bob Avakian again. I'm going to share some things together with somebody else about what we've been encountering as we take this revolution out to the college campuses.
And we're going to start with the fact that last week was the 51st anniversary of the passage of the right to abortion in this country for women. This right was ripped away from women in the spring of 2022 by the fascist Supreme Court. And to mark this, Revolution Books held a program with Merrill Hoffman, who has just written a new book. And she was a co-initiator, along with Eusen Sarah Taylor, of Rise Up for Abortion Rights. And she's been a fighter for the rights of women, and is particularly for the right to abortion, and as a provider of abortion in New York. So let's go right to that program in New York City.
So it's very good to be at Revolution Books. I see so many of the people that I worked with, that I struggled with, that I marched with, and in a sense it does feel like home. So thanks all of you. This is my first reading, of the book, and I really wanted to be. So tonight I'm going to be speaking about a lot of things. Revolution, resistance, the courage of no, kind of radical love that drives me, and I think drives all of you and all of us who are involved in this kind of work. And I'd like to quote Che Guevara. This is a good one. He says, "At the risk of seeming ridiculous, I believe every true revolutionary is fueled by great feelings of love." Yes, so here I am, and not celebrating, but marking what would have been the 51st anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And I started to think, I don't want this to be the 51st anniversary of that loss. We have to remember it. We have to honor it. But I'd like this to be the year two. I'd like us to start again in a sense of rebuilding what we've lost here. Because this is not what we had. And we have to envision, and we have to operationalize, and we do have to rebuild. I predicted the outcome of Dobbs the moment I heard the Supreme Court agreed to hear the case. Before the leak, before the media suddenly focused its attention on the issue, before anyone was even talking about it, I knew it was coming, and I knew what it meant. The end of Roe. A catastrophe. As far as I could see, there was no one saying, "It's coming, we have to get ready." Instead, there was a kind of preemptive post-Roe strategic thinking that was bubbling up. If they ban abortion in certain states, the thinking went, how do we raise money to pay for women to travel? Or we have to get the pills to everyone. To me, this was nothing short of surrender. Absolutely. People were lying down before the battle even begun.
Yeah, right?
At that time, the public silence on this looming disaster was absolute and horrifying. I did not sit long with this knowledge without acting. In December 2021, I co-initiated Rise Up for Abortion Rights. I felt I had no choice but to get out and do something. Our first rally was in front of the Supreme Court on January 22nd, 2022, the 49th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. By May of that year, Politico published a leaked draft of the majority opinion, and the world saw the truth in plain sight, what I had been predicting for half a year. Rise Up was already out in the streets and calling for mass protests. We were active, we were poised, and we were ready. In June 2022, activists with Rise Up were sleeping in front of the Supreme Court in expectation of the decision coming down. We had to be there when it happened, and it was really very good that we were. the cameras from news outlets around the world flashed on a large contingent of anti-abortion activists. They were orgasmic, of course. There were champagne bottles being opened, joyful outbursts of songs and chants of praise God, praise Jesus. It was like the second coming. On the other side, there were women and girls hysterical, hugging and supporting each other in a state of total devastation. But it was only Rise Up, with our green banners and chants of resistance and struggle, legal abortion on demand, forced motherhood as female enslavement, that was making it clear that this decision would not and could not stand. It was a Waterloo moment, a major battle lost, but we would fight this for as long as it took. When the decision did come down, the states that had trigger bans on their books almost immediately stopped doing abortions. Right. At my clinic, Choices, we went from seeing 5 to 8 patients coming from places like Alabama and Texas each month to 15 a week from Texas alone. For many years, I had been making the point that this struggle was generational. I viewed the wins and losses of our court cases as theaters of war, never ends in themselves. Dobbs is no different. Only the damage is far more devastating and long-lasting. We are living through a powerful, challenging, unprecedented moment, a moment in which a fundamental human and civil rights is being ripped away from half the people in this country. The Dobbs decision will no doubt reshape the lives of countless women and families for generations to come. We are at war.
That was Merle Hoffman speaking at Revolution Books in Harlem, New York City. And she is 100% correct when she says, look, there is a war against women that is raging. And it's time for people to confront that and stand up against it. And she was also right when she said there was an abject surrender in advance by the so-called pro-choice, so-called movement when abortion rights were on the line. And I just want to add to what she said, that this surrender was led by the very top levels of the Democratic Party, this ruling class party that postures and fronts as if they are friends of women, defenders of women's fundamental rights and lives, but really are more determined to keep women and decent people tied and chained to this system. And not only did they downplay the danger of overturning Roe, not only did they downplay and continue to downplay the devastation this is causing to millions of women's lives all over this country, this capitulation has continued, which brings us to a new feature of the Revolution Nothing Less show that we're debuting tonight on our episode, which is the stupidest thing I've heard this week. And we are going to take you to Phoenix, Arizona, where last week the leader of the Women's March said the following on the anniversary of Roe v. Wade.
It turns out that Trump was right about one thing and wrong about another thing. He was right about getting tired of winning, but he just didn't know it was us that was going to be doing all the winning.
Okay, that qualifies as the stupidest thing I've heard this week. She says we are winning so much we should be sick of winning. And first of all, you wouldn't be having this rally if it wasn't on the anniversary of a fundamental right that has been lost. Second of all, even if you could ignore that, just count by the numbers. She's bragging about all the pro-choice ballot initiatives that have been won. 7. How many states have enacted bans on abortion since Dobbs, since Roe v. Wade was overturned? 22. You are not winning. Now, we can win. And we can win not only women's fundamental right to abortion back, but a whole different world and a whole different future. Not by begging these Democrats, trying to get them elected and playing within and by the rules of this system, but by rising up and unleashing the fury of women as a mighty force for a real revolution. That's what time it is, and that's what we are calling you into on this show.
Let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show. My name is Sansara Taylor, and I am your guest host.
We want to step back now to where we began today's program. The brutal reality of police murder of people. Disproportionately black people and other people of color. And then the social media post from Bob Avakian that posed and answered the question, when was America ever great? With the answer, never. The reality is this system cannot be reformed. And in 2018, Bob Avakian gave a very important speech, which is available on our website, revcom.us, titled, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make That Revolution. And it begins with Bob Avakian talking about what we call the five stops. They are this. 1, white supremacy and police brutality and murder. 2, the oppression of women everywhere and all oppression based on gender or sexual orientation. 3, wars of empire and crimes against humanity. 4, the demonization, the criminalization, and the deportations of immigrants and the militarization of the border. And 5, the destruction of the environment. All 5 of these are deep and defining contradictions of this capitalist imperialist system, which caused tremendous suffering and destruction. And they must be protested and resisted in a powerful way, as he says in the speech, with real determination to stop them. But these 5 stops can only be finally ended by putting an end to this system itself. He begins with the first of these 5 stops, the oppression of black people and other people of color. Watch this now.
The oppression of black people and other people of color. This system in this country was founded in genocide and slavery. From the beginning, African Americans and Native Americans were treated as pariahs, a caste of people less than human and not deserving of the same rights and opportunities as the European settlers of the territory. White supremacy was poured into the foundation and into every institution of the country. The uniting of the United States was accomplished through the compromise written into the founding constitution that institutionalized slavery. And for generations, slave labor produced a great part of the wealth of this country. As I said in Basics 1-1, there would be no United States as we now know it today without slavery. That is a simple and basic truth. And then, when it was no longer possible to contain the conflicts that had been somewhat held in check by the founding compromise, the Civil War erupted between the southern slave states and the northern states, which increasingly were based on the exploitation of wage labor by capitalists. But shortly after the end of this Civil War, another compromise was engineered, which was a continuation of the original compromise under the new conditions. The country was put back together on the basis of reaffirming and reinforcing white supremacy. With the masses of black people still overwhelmingly in the South, subjugated and terrorized into second-class citizen status, exploited in conditions of near slavery and sometimes still literal slavery by white plantation and other property owners. And the land and way of life of the native peoples was further stolen through armed conquest and decimated by slaughter, confinement in reservations, and cultural genocide, which has resulted in the poverty, oppression, and repression that continues to be inflicted on Native Americans to this day. Under slavery, it was the armed patrols and militias organized by the slave owners that hunted down slaves who rebelled or just tried to escape and terrorized the masses of black people as a whole. After slavery, with Jim Crow segregation, it was the Ku Klux Klan, together with local sheriffs, who largely played this role. Today, in the conditions in which masses of black people in the ghettos of the inner cities find themselves. The role that was played in the past by the slave patrols and then the Ku Klux Klan and local sheriffs is now carried out by heavily armed urban police forces. This is a big part of the overall role of the police, which, as I said in Basics 124, is not to serve and protect the people. It is to serve and protect the system that rules over the people, to enforce the relations of exploitation and oppression, the conditions of poverty, misery, and degradation into which the system has cast people and is determined to keep people in. The law and order the police are about, with all their brutality and murder, is the law and order that enforces all this oppression and madness. In the days of slavery and then Jim Crow segregation after the Civil War, the oppressors viciously exploited and terrorized Black people, brutally murdering those they saw as posing a threat or not staying in their place. But they did not kill off or incarcerate a huge part of the Black population because their labor was needed as a backbone and crucial source of profit for the cotton plantations and the overall economy in the South and the country as a whole. Today, with great numbers of Black people concentrated in the inner cities, and with many factories and other capitalist enterprises having moved away from the urban cores, the police have killed thousands of Black people in the last few decades, and they play a key part in forcibly maintaining masses of Black people in a situation where, especially youth, robbed of any decent future under this system, are killing each other in the thousands, and millions are either incarcerated or in some other way under the control of the so-called justice system. Because white supremacy is such a defining part of this country, it is not just African Americans and Native Americans, but people of color generally who are subjected to discrimination, degradation, and brutality. And this applies now in acute ways to those whose roots lie in Mexico, El Salvador, and other parts of Central America and the Caribbean, which are tightly ensnared in a net of domination and exploitation by the imperialists of the USA, whose ravaging of these countries has driven many to emigrate to the US itself. White supremacy and capitalism, they have been completely interwoven and tightly stitched together through the whole development of this country down to today. To attempt to really put an end to white supremacy while maintaining the system of capitalism would tear the entire fabric of the country apart. White supremacy and capitalism. It is not possible to overcome and finally abolish the one without overthrowing and finally abolishing the other.
What's up, everyone? This is Luna Hernandez with the Rev Comms in LA, and I'm here with Sansara Taylor. And we've been going out to the campus UCLA on a mission, one, to challenge students about actual revolution and to recruit and organize them into the revolution. And we put out this open letter, which people can read at revcom.us, that starts off with, "Look, we challenge you to dedicate this decisive year and your life to learning about, fighting for, and getting organized for revolution, the only way to wrench out an emancipatory future for humanity. Because the reality is the world is being radically changed, and what you do or fail to do can make all the difference. And so since we've been out there really on a mission and putting this in front of people, some students have been coming forward, but they've also been posing some really important questions that we want to answer here on the show. So one of the first questions I wanted to ask Sansara Taylor that one of these students has asked us and has come up is that not just one student, actually several students have asked. They mentioned, okay, since you guys have one leader, and especially a leader that's an old white man, you know, that may be, they say that may be alienating to so many people, since the cause is more important than any one person. So they suggest, okay, maybe BA would also agree that it would be helpful for him at this point to just step back. So I don't know what you think about that question. How would you answer that? And why is it so important to get into this?
Yeah, well, I think the question is completely upside down. Bob Avakian is not alienating people from revolution. To the degree that some people are rubbed the wrong way by Bob Avakian or by the way that we fiercely fight for Bob Avakian's leadership, it's because they are alienated from revolution already. They're not thinking about revolution in any kind of a real way. They're not thinking about what it would take to overthrow this system. They're not thinking about how it could actually be defeated. They're not thinking about what you'd put in its place, how you'd run a new government, a new economy, new education system, new healthcare, new relations to the people of the world. How would you transform and overcome all the centuries and millennia of oppressive ideas and relations among people and meet people's needs and do this as part of a worldwide process? If you are thinking about that, and those are just two of the questions involved in making revolution. If you're thinking about that and you encounter Bob Avakian's work and leadership, you say, holy shit, this guy has addressed these questions and so many more in ways that nobody else has. If we didn't have Bob Avakian, we wouldn't have a strategy for revolution. People wouldn't have a way to fight to get free. If we didn't have Bob Avakian and the work he's done, we wouldn't have a framework and a blueprint for a new socialist republic, a constitution and an approach to navigating all the way to human emancipation. If we didn't have Bob Avakian, we wouldn't have the thoroughly scientific method that he has developed to this new communism that everybody can take up to be part of navigating this revolution, and so that we can confront, we humanity can confront the many unforeseen and unforeseeable obstacles that will emerge in humanity's path going forward and be able to tackle these. If you are thinking seriously about revolution and all the contradictions involved in it, including how you'd wake up millions in this country who right now are not thinking about revolution and are caught up in all kinds of backwards ideas like, I got to get mine and I'm into money and bitches and I just got to do me and all the religious crap, how you'd change all that. If you're thinking about how you'd move these people to be ready to make revolution, you'd say, we are so lucky to have Bob Avakian and the work he's done on all these questions and so many more. And as for this idea that, okay, maybe Bob Avakian made these breakthroughs, but now he should step back. This is as absurd as saying, okay, you know, you're rooting for your team in basketball and Steph Curry has been leading his team throughout the whole season and made it into the playoffs and won this game and led in winning that game. And they're right up to the final game where the whole thing is on the line. But now Steph Curry should step back and let some other people throw some three-pointers. I mean, if you're serious about winning, that is asinine. If you're serious about winning, and as thrilling as a basketball championship may be, real revolution is much higher stakes, much more thrilling, much more emancipating. It's the fate of 8 billion people on this planet. If you're serious about getting humanity free, you want your greatest player to be way out in front, leading your team to greatness, and you want everybody taking advantage of that strength. Bob Avakian's ongoing strategic leadership, active, not past tense, active now, navigating this revolution. You take advantage of that and you race to catch up. And you fight for that everywhere. And so this is the challenge before us. And we should not conform to the ignorance and prejudice of people as they've been indoctrinated by this society to say, we don't want leaders. We don't want an old white man. All the bullshit that is in their head instead of thinking about revolution and the gift that we have in Bob Avakian's leadership. We need to change those prejudices. We need to wake people up to revolution. And we need to fight for Bob Avakian. And he is actually our greatest asset in winning people to this revolution. So again, the question is completely upside down.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. And again, like, I think people should think about that metaphor in terms of what are the stakes right now this year? And what is, you know, how is BA actually ahead of the game in terms of the breakthroughs he's actually made to make a real revolution? And that's what you want to ask to step back? No, like, I really think that's important for people to think about.
So before we close, we want to take on a lot more questions. We want a lot of you watching to join us in taking this open letter out to the campuses where you are. Write to us about what you're running into. Record your answers to the questions, how you're speaking to these things or what you're having trouble speaking to, and we'll try to take on more here. Before we end, I want to play, Luna did a TikTok responding to another thing that comes up on campus, so we'll play that at the end, but I'm really glad we got started here with this today.
What's up, everyone? This is Luna Hernandez with the RevComs in Los Angeles. And look, some students at UCLA have asked us, what makes the RevComs different than the other socialist groups on this campus? You want to know what's different? I'll tell you what's different. The RevComs are serious about an actual revolution, an overthrow of this system of capitalism and imperialism. And we have a strategy right here to make a real revolution. And I would ask these other so-called socialist groups, what's their strategy to make a real revolution? They don't have one. And look, we have revolutionary hardcore leadership in Barbara Vakian. What's their leadership? The PSL leads the masses of people at different protests in this ridiculous chant that goes, money for jobs and education, not for wars and occupation. You would never catch the RevComs doing some American chauvinist like that. Why? Because where does that money for jobs and education for people in this country come from? It comes from the super exploitation of billions of people all over the world that the U.S. wages wars and invasions and occupations to enforce that super exploitation. And no, DSA and Bernie Sanders, we don't need a better redistribution of the spoils of U.S. empire. We need to overthrow U.S. imperialism and get real. We need a real socialism, not a social welfare state. We declare and demand that the existing capitalist imperialist system and institutions of government in this country must be abolished and dismantled and replaced by a new socialist system based on the Constitution for the new socialist republic in North America, which you could read right here. And look, get with the RevComs if you're serious about actual revolution and actual socialism.
You are listening to The Michael Slate Show. We're going to take a short musical break and be right back.
The feds are staging a civil war, and Texas should stand their ground. The Supreme Court is going to put the federal government at war with the state of Texas. These words are ruling fascist Republicans, Representative Clay Higgins, a congressman from Louisiana, and Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, the lunatic congresswoman from Georgia. And these statements reveal the standoff about who has jurisdiction over the Texas-Mexico border. The U.S. Border Patrol, which has legal authority over all the borders, or the fascist governor of Texas, who deployed the state's National Guard. Texas has lined the Rio Grande, the river that separates Texas and Mexico, with giant floating barriers lined with circular saws and wrapped in barbed wire. And overall, they've installed over 70,000 rolls of razor wire along the border. This onslaught of anti-immigrant terror is being organized by fascist Texas Governor Greg Abbott. This has caused a watery death trap, causing injury, maiming, and death. On January 12th, in Eagle Pass, Texas, 33-year-old Victorma de la Sancha Cerros and her two children, 10-year-old Yorle Ruby and 8-year-old Jonathan Agustin Briones, drowned in the Rio Grande. The U.S. Border Patrol say they were prevented by the Texas National Guard from being able to save them. The National Guard denies this. We don't know what happened. But take a minute and put yourself in Victorma's shoes. Not much is known about her and her two children, but she was probably like millions of dispossessed, impoverished people around the world desperately seeking a way to live. So desperate that she carried her two children into a dangerous river. So desperate that she tried to get to a riverbank lined with razor wire and rifle-toting soldiers who regard her as their enemy. And think about what she confronted. A militarized death zone with razor wire fences, enormous walls, tens of thousands of heavily armed federal, state, and local police, National Guard soldiers, Border Patrol, and white supremacist vigilantes on the lookout for human beings that they call illegals. Thousands have died trying to reach the border. At each step, they face renewed terror by the very system that forced them to flee their imperialist-dominated homelands. This past week, Texas National Guard seized control of 2.5 miles along the border in Eagle Pass, and they kicked out the federal Border Patrol. Texas authorities also started arresting immigrants and denying their right to asylum in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. Biden is asking the Supreme Court to intervene and stop this. And this past week, in a temporary move, the Supreme Court ruled that the Border Patrol could remove the barbed wire until a full decision is made. But the Texas governor, attorney general, and other fascists in government have all said they won't comply with the Supreme Court ruling. And in a statement yesterday, Abbott declared open defiance against the federal government, claiming that Texas is facing an invasion of migrants, which the federal government is not protecting Texas from. He claims this invasion requires the armed forces of Texas to secure the Texas border. An invasion. What's the reality? In 2023, over 2 million people crossed the U.S.'s southern border, driven by climate change, war, and hunger caused by this system of capitalism imperialism. And the fact is that neither the Republican fascists or Biden and the Democrats have an answer to the mass migration taking place except different forms of a nightmare. Trump promises the largest domestic deportation operation in American history. He intends to end birthright citizenship, meaning that children with undocumented parents will themselves be undocumented, even if they were born in the U.S. And he wants to build large-scale concentration camps at the border in Texas. And the fascists wrap all this in straight-up Nazi talk. Trump calls immigrants criminals, rapists, and pedophiles who are poisoning the blood of our country. Biden has a different program, slightly less repression and without the bloodlust. But ironically, while giving some lip service to the humanity of migrants, Biden has actually expelled more immigrants than any other president in history and has expanded the militarization at the border. But this doesn't matter to the fascists. They accuse Biden and the Democrats of having an open border policy of destroying America. And they want much more vicious and repressive measures now. Meanwhile, the brutal U.S. Border Patrol and the fascist-led Texas National Guard are arrayed against each other. Even a minor incident set off by anger, accident, or misunderstanding could trigger a major armed crisis between ruling class forces. And this could potentially unfold in a way where armed fascists who are itching for civil war, begin openly participating. This standoff is a concentration of the sharpening differences among the rulers over how to rule this system. Differences that outline a looming clash likely to come to a head by the 2024 election, if not sooner. Left to itself, this is a nightmare, with the two sides fighting over how to maintain their system of capitalism imperialism. But these are not our only choices. We can't afford to, and we don't have to, leave this to itself. Right now, Everyone who wants to see a better world needs to join with the RevComs to be part of changing everything urgently. For the revolution that's needed and more possible exactly because of these kinds of clashes and the whole way society is being ripped apart, there is a liberating answer. Through making this revolution and bringing into being a society based on the Constitution for the new Socialist Republic in North America, authored by the revolutionary leader Bob Avakian. This Constitution makes clear that immigrants from all parts of the world who have a sincere desire to contribute to the goals of the new Socialist Republic will be welcome in this republic. Now is the time to get organized for this revolution. We don't have an immigration problem. We have an imperialism problem. We need and we demand revolution for a whole new way to live and a fundamentally different system.
Why is the U.S. bombing one of the poorest countries in the world? This is the question I asked myself as the U.S. carried out 8 massive missile strikes in Yemen over the last 2 weeks. The target of these missile strikes has been an Islamic fundamentalist group called the Houthis, who have been attacking commercial shipping in the Red Sea. This has disrupted global trade through this strategic region in the Middle East, affecting economies all over the world. But the Houthis say their aim is to force the U.S. and Israel to end their genocidal war against Palestinians in Gaza. But funny enough, when I read Biden's statement on the missile strikes against the Houthis, there was no mention of Israel's war at all. Instead, Biden said that he ordered the strikes because the Houthis endanger freedom of navigation. At first, I didn't understand. What does this phrase, freedom of navigation, mean? Did the Houthis declare war on Google Maps? Is this a holy war against GPS? So I went and did some research, and I learned that freedom of navigation refers to the right for vessels to freely enter ports and to load and unload goods and transport goods and passengers. Well, doesn't that seem like a noble cause? But then I realized I don't seem to remember Biden ordering any missile strikes against Israel for stopping aid trucks from delivering food and water to millions facing starvation in Gaza. I must have missed that one. I mean, surely the U.S. must have launched some kind of military operation after Israelis opened fire on aid convoys. Seems like that would be a pretty big violation of freedom of navigation. Or what about freedom of navigation to get medicine to Gaza's doctors so when they have to amputate the limbs of children injured by Israeli bombs, they can at least give them anesthesia first? By the same logic, it seems that that should have warranted a military operation or two. You know, while we're talking about Yemen, I seem to remember the U.S. fully supporting Saudi Arabia in invading Yemen from 2014 to 2022, almost a decade, blockading its main port, contributing to a famine which led to the death of 377,000 Yemenis. I guess in that case, defending freedom of navigation meant defending the right of Saudi Arabia to navigate Yemeni people into an early grave. It seems, and in fact, I would dare to say, that the reality of this phrase, freedom of navigation, to these imperialists means freedom for them and their allies to roam the globe freely, exploiting billions of desperately poor people to feed cheap products from cheap labor into global supply chains that can be turned into maximum profits. And then, to send armies and warships wherever they please to force people to accept the horrible conditions that imperialism subjects them to, or to go beat back rival predators who want to prey on the same people they are. I would say that freedom of navigation means freedom to dominate navigation. Look, now that we've put this bullshit to bed, let's talk for real. This is a dangerous escalation by the U.S. that's really about two things. One, Israel plays a key strategic role in helping the U.S. control the Middle East. The U.S. attacked Yemen to defend Israel's genocidal war and to force the Houthis to stop interfering. And two, to maintain U.S. domination over global shipping lanes and global trade, and to send a message to any other wise guys who might smell weakness that America is still the boss. This is extremely dangerous and could lead to setting off a regional war with Iran, and possibly even kicking off a world war if Russia or China get involved. But for the U.S. imperialists, that's a risk they're willing to take, and just part of the cost of doing business. This is the insanity of the system of capitalism imperialism that we live under. Oh, and one last thing. To all you people out there cheerleading the Houthis as the resistance, I guess I must have missed the invite to the How to Establish a Religious Theocracy, Take Away Women's Rights, and Persecute Homosexuality Club. If your vision of resistance has more in common with a Mike Pence wet dream than genuine liberation, I think you've gone off track. And it's time to get back on track. And you can start by going to Bob Avakian Official on social media and listening to the hard-hitting truth he's bringing about big things going on in the world and how this shows the urgent need for a real revolution, including what is happening in Palestine now.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature. It is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night, while the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood.